There were a number of irregularities in this last election. The administration weren't calling for a recount, and it seemed like there needed to be a hand recount.
Anchorage voters call for a new count of the municipal election. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, May 3rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, UAA gets the go-ahead to award doctoral degrees.
It really does represent a major change in the status of UAA's degree offering.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
1 month after the Anchorage municipal election ballot fiasco, the Assembly is set tonight to consider certification of the April 3rd election. A group of voters says that should not happen before a hand recount and independent investigation. But today, the Assembly released a report by an independent counsel supporting certification. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
The attorney hired by the Assembly recommends certifying the election. In the report, Timothy Pechiminos writes that, quote, outright corrupt or criminal conduct, which may have been aimed at affecting the outcome of an election, is insufficient grounds to invalidate an election unless the conduct reasonably had the potential for changing the outcome, end quote. But that opinion will not sit well with a group of voters pushing for an audit and hand recount of the election. Guadalupe Mariquin is one voter who's pushing for a recount. She says it's premature to certify the election before there's been an independent investigation and a hand count of the ballots.
It's a very easy beginning to bring the public back into feeling like they have ownership with elections.
And Mariquin's opinion holds some weight. She served as deputy clerk for the municipality from 2003 to 2009. In a letter to the Assembly and in an opinion piece which appeared in the Anchorage Daily News earlier this week, she lists several concerns about the election. But her main concern is voting machine irregularities.
There was such lack of security in the care of the security seals that were placed on the AccuVote machines to protect the memory cards.
The current deputy clerk, Jacqueline Duke, addressed that issue in an interview on April 21st. She acknowledged that the seals on the AccuVote memory cards were flimsy and prone to breaking in transport. She says she told workers that they could replace those tabs if they were broken.
Yes, it's very important to keep the machine from being tampered with. But the person who would have tampered with it is the election worker themselves.
So it's possible they could have been tampered with by an election worker if that tab was broken.
Absolutely.
Duke says for tampering to occur, you'd have to have an extremely deep understanding of the voting machine cards, the software, and the machines themselves, and that the clerk's office is counting on the honesty of election workers.
Can you reassure people that there was no tampering, or can you not?
You know what? If you ever doubt that there's tampering or think that something illegal happened to the election, that's why we have a process called recount. We have every single ballot that's secure, it's in every single precinct ballot bag secure in the office, and if you would like, we can recount the entire election.
That's exactly what attorney Hal Gazaway would like to see happen. He's the leader of the group that filed the application with the clerk's office this week, requesting an audit and a physical hand recount of the paper ballots from the election.
There were a number of irregularities in this last election. There were a number of petitions being circulated online and a lot of email traffic. The administration weren't calling for a recount, and it seemed like there needed to be a hand recount.
Gazaway says one big reason he'd like to see a recount is because of reports of problems with the voting machines. And it's critical to have a hand recount before certification. He's hoping for a big voter turnout at tonight's special assembly meeting where certification is on the table.
I think that the people, if they're concerned about whether their vote counts, I think this is the time for them to step up and speak that they want their vote to count, that they're not apathetic and just don't care, that they do care that their votes are counted. They do care that they have the opportunity to vote.
Ultimately, Gasaway says his group would like to see an independent third-party investigation of the April 3rd municipal election, something the Assembly Chair has said is likely to happen, but not necessarily before the election is certified. Gasaway says the hand count should come before any of that. If the election's certified, under municipal code, all paper ballots will be destroyed within 30 days of certification. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
A North Slope health worker says a February oil spill blowout has left lingering physical effects on villagers some 18 miles from the well. She says Nuiqsut villagers seem to have a high incidence of respiratory ailments this spring, although state officials blame the maladies on the flu. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports.
Rose Maria Tungaruk spent 24 years as a community health aide in Nuiqsut. She told a group of Alaska Native and American Indian women leaders this week that respiratory ailments increased in Nuiqsut after the February Repsol blowout spilled thousands of gallons of drilling mud and released an undetermined amount of natural gas into the atmosphere.
They evacuated the crew from the site, but they did not evacuate our community that was 18 miles away. There was a rapid increase of respiratory illness in our village with that event. Our elders called me and let me know family members were being sent in to Barrow for help because they were having trouble breathing. Children were sent to Barrow. People are still sick.
Enda Tungaruk says Nuiqsut villagers only heard about the blowout through Facebook postings.
We had Native people working around the industrial area that notified our community, family members and others through Facebook, and that's how we found out that had happened. It took over a week for the North Slope Borough to come out with a response team to the community. It took till day number 12 to get sampling done of the air quality.
A diverter put in place after the blowout occurred channeled the gas away from the well, but Atungaruk says the gas was not contained. Repsol spokeswoman Jan Sieving would not comment on the health allegations, referring questions to the North Slope Borough Health Department. Sieving said gas only escaped from the blown-out well for 8 hours on the day of the accident. She says since February 16th, nothing has flowed out of the well and that it is closed with cement plugs. Joe McLaughlin, director of the State Division of Epidemiology, says Nuiqsut Village did not file a formal complaint with state health authorities in the days after the blowout.
We actually did receive word back in February, it was February 22nd, that there were some concerns about people with acute respiratory irritation and eye irritation shortly after the event. And that actually came to us through the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium.
McLaughlin said further investigation resulted in little evidence of a consistent type of illness among a large number of people in Nuiqsut.
But it wasn't clear that they all sort of happened at the same time. We really didn't have a large group of people, i.e., you know, more than five or six people who all had sort of a sudden onset of eye irritation and respiratory illness that you would expect with like an explosion.
McLaughlin says air quality samples taken by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium after the event showed only background levels of the organic chemicals associated with a well blowout. He says a gas leak in a village line occurred during the same week as the blowout, causing confusion about the source of a local gas smell.
At the end of the day, we really weren't able to say whether or not definitively these people were exposed to volatile organic chemicals as a result of this explosion. The feeling was that the likelihood of a significant exposure was low.
McLaughlin says it is unlikely the well gas affected people because of the distance of the village from the Repsol well. The Division of Epidemiology keeps data on infectious diseases but has no records of incidences of respiratory diseases related to proximity to natural gas. McLaughlin says various viruses make the rounds of villages in Alaska every winter. And this year, the viruses peaked at the end of April, and it is most likely that a heavy flu season prompted many of the respiratory ailments. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
North Slope officials were contacted for this story, but declined comment. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the type of aviation trade show that could only happen in the aviation state.
People will hang out for a good 2 days, say hi to everybody they haven't seen in a year, catch up, tell some stories, and shop.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at AlaskaPublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. AlaskaPublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
Following a decision to implement aerial wolf hunts on the Kenai Peninsula as a means of increasing local moose populations, the Department of Fish and Game has decided to suspend those operations for at least a year in order to gather more information. KDLL's Shaylin Cochran has the story.
Advocates and opponents of aerial wolf hunting spent many hours debating the merits of that method of predator control over the winter, and in January, the Department of Fish and Game made the decision to allow it. Now, Fish and Game has decided that more data is necessary to find the best way to achieve the goal of increasing moose populations on the Kenai.
I think the main thing to emphasize is that we want to have the best information possible so that we're most effective in what we do to improve the moose population on the Kenai.
That was Larry Van Dale, a wildlife biologist for Fish and Game based in Kodiak. He says wolf hunting and other aggressive predation management techniques are but a sample of the tools available for strengthening moose numbers. Taking some time to gather additional information about things like productivity will help zero in on what the best method is.
If there's very low productivity, then is that because the moose are not getting pregnant, or is that because the calves are dying soon afterwards, either by natural causes or by predators?
John Toppenberg is the director of the Alaska Wildlife Alliance. He spoke out against aerial wolf hunting this winter and is in the camp that feels habitation management, not predator control, is the key to bringing the moose back.
We would like to see a more critical evaluation of fires, naturally occurring fires, and allow them to burn to whatever degree they possibly can within the framework of being safe for the residents of the peninsula. It's clear that habitat is the real issue here on the peninsula, and that's the real way to enhance our habitat.
On that method, the Alliance and Fish and Game are on the same page.
We know some parts of the Kenai have not been burned for a while, and moose, of course, like to have that stage between when it's grass and it's heavy forest.
Active management of a natural resource like moose demands a balance of strategies, Van Dale says, each bringing a unique benefit toward the overall goal.
We need to look at what the hunting seasons are doing. The hunting seasons for the moose and the hunting seasons for the bears and the wolves. And we want to see if there are ways that we can encourage people to go out and target those particular wolves and black bears and even brown bears that may be going after moose calves and utilize them as a resource, not as something that gets shot by aerial gunning.
Proponents of wolf hunting and other means of predation control have said that it's the obligation of the state to take advantage of any method that contributes to the goal of increasing moose numbers. Toppenberg says he and his group support the idea that any decisions being made concerning moose populations and habitat be supported by sound science rather than a desire for quick results.
They did not have science going into this, and they're going to hopefully wait for some real evidentiary conclusions from this science. We certainly approve of that and hope they wait till all the results are in before they consider wolf control here on the peninsula.
Reporting from Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
The University of Alaska Anchorage is going to award its first doctorate degrees next week. The PhDs in clinical psychology will go to two students in a program administered jointly by UAA and the University of Alaska Fairbanks. In the past, UAF has handed out the doctoral degrees for the program, but now UAA's name will also appear on the diploma. Mike Driscoll is UAA's provost. He says it took the university at least 4 years to make the accreditation change.
Prior to this news, we were allowed to award master's degrees, baccalaureate degrees, associate's degrees by our regional accreditor, but we weren't allowed to offer any form of doctorate. with this change in status, we will be allowed to offer other doctoral degrees in the future, assuming, of course, that the Board of Regents approved the specific program and so on. But it really does represent a major change in the status of UAA's degree offerings, which means more access to advanced graduate education in the Anchorage area and in South Central Alaska.
And will UAA going forward be able to offer these independent of UAF, or will they still be sort of in conjunction with?
The short answer is yes, we would be able to offer independent doctorates. A strength of the PhD in psychology is that it's a partnership, and we draw on the strengths of both faculty. So that's a good thing. But the status that we've received does allow us to go forward. And the Board of Regents have looked at a couple other possible degrees to come from UAA. And an example of that is the doctorate in nursing practice. We are the School of Nursing for the state, and a doctorate in nursing practice is going to become a requirement for those folks who are going to be nurse practitioners. We also have the possibility in the short term of looking at an education doctorate in educational leadership. That's the sort of a doctorate that maybe a superintendent or a principal would take beyond their master's degree. And those are two things that the regents have looked at and said, well, we would consider those coming forward from UAA.
How big is the demand for doctoral degrees in Alaska?
That's a fundamental question, and it varies greatly by the area of specialty. So I believe that we hope to graduate from the PhD in clinical community psychology, maybe 4 to 8 students a year when it's fully up and running, and that fills a need. The graduates will go back and work in urban and rural Alaska. For the education doctorate, I expect that you would see similar kinds of numbers a year probably as graduates. Doctoral programs don't generate huge numbers of graduates because of their intensity. And so it really is a balance about what's needed for the state versus the cost of offering the program.
Do you anticipate that having it, as you said, it's not large numbers of folks, but do you anticipate that it may attract different students?
I think that there are two key things that happen. We will see a different group of students that might not otherwise come to UAA, or maybe more importantly, Alaskans that would go somewhere else. The second thing that's important is it will attract or allow us to attract a different group of faculty than might otherwise come to an institution. So we should be able to get even better faculty than we have now.
Mike Driscoll is UAA's provost.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
The final group of the Fort Wainwright-based Stryker Brigade soldiers returned to Fairbanks from Afghanistan yesterday. The contingent of 100 was the last of the 4,000-member unit that deployed overseas a year ago. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The Fort Wainwright-based soldiers were greeted by friends and family in a hangar on post, just as thousands of fellow Stryker Brigade members have been over the last 6 weeks. Captain Kenneth Hahn says he ended up on the final plane after sacrificing seats on earlier flights to other soldiers.
It feels great to see everybody, especially the soldiers that I already got back. All my family's still back in Virginia, so going home next month and getting married, so I'll see everybody then.
Another soldier on the last flight, Staff Sergeant Denise Monroe, an assistant chaplain with the Stryker Brigade, says it's surreal transitioning from Afghanistan back to Fairbanks.
It was a long year, honestly, but I learned a lot. I got some really great friends, made some really great friends in the unit, and overall I'm glad I did it, but there was definitely a learning curve. Afghanistan was different.
Monroe says it was challenging and stressful coping with long days, danger, and loss. 21 Stryker Brigade soldiers were killed in Afghanistan, most from roadside bomb attacks. Brigade Commander Colonel Todd Woods says he welcomes the end of the deployment.
A tremendous amount of satisfaction as well as relief to have everybody back home on the ground, reunited.
The Stryker Brigade's mission in southern Afghanistan was focused on training Afghan army and police to take over security. Commander Woods says a lack of infrastructure and education were big obstacles, but they saw a major improvement in the Afghan force over the last year.
We did an operation 2 weeks before we left, where we had the equivalent of this entire brigade. 3,600 Afghans were in the field conducting security operations as part of a clearance, which at the beginning of our deployment, we were doing that. That would have been us with 3,600. It was them, and they were very successful. Thousands of pounds of IED materials as well as opium came out of the ground that would fund the Taliban's fight this year. These guys did that. And have largely defeated the Taliban in the areas that we were at.
Commander Wood says it's too early to talk about future Fort Wainwright deployments to Afghanistan. He says the Army has reduced the length of overseas duty from 12 to 9 months, with longer intervals in between. Ceremonies marking the Stryker Brigade's return home and a change of command are coming up later this month. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska has more pilots and airplanes per capita than any other state. And this weekend is their own version of the Great Alaska Sportsman Show. It's a chance to see the latest airplanes and flight products and visit with old friends. The show is organized by the Alaska Airmen's Association. Rex Gray is a board member of the organization and a pilot. He has this story.
It's quiet today at Lake Hood, the world's largest seaplane base, adjacent to the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. I asked Dee Hansen, Executive Director of the Alaska Airmen's Association, about that.
I just noticed coming over here that Lake Hood is still frozen out here. Is that kind of late for this year?
Actually, I think because of all the snow, yes. But normally, this is when the lake goes out, is the first week of May.
Mm-hmm.
Like clockwork, this might be the first year that it's not out. I think that it's key for this show.
The show is the Great Alaska Aviation Gathering. It's an aviation trade show that has become the annual kickoff to Alaska's summer flying season. Hansen says it's not like other aviation trade shows around the country.
You go to other shows out, you know, in the lower 48, and you can walk a trade show in two or three hours easily. Mm-hmm. But this show, everybody knows everybody. It's a big, like, gathering. And people will hang out for good 2 days, say hi to everybody they haven't seen in a year, catch up, tell some stories, and shop.
The Alaska Airmen's Association, a nonprofit of about 2,500 members, put together this show. The goal is to promote general aviation in Alaska. FedEx donates the use of their hangar, the largest in the state, for the indoor booths and vendors. 14 airplanes will be displayed inside. The military will have an F-22 outside, and a FedEx cargo airplane will be available for tours. Hansen says the success of the show is that it's strictly aviation.
I think that we have the right formula. You have to be aviation to be at this trade show. A lot of people would like to kind of piggyback and come in because they see, you know, what the clientele that's here. But I think we have the winning equation that it's aviation only.
The Great Alaska Aviation Gathering opens Saturday at 9 a.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. and closes both days at 5. Seminars will be held both days. The trade show wraps up Sunday with someone winning an airplane for a $50 raffle ticket. But Hansen says the show isn't about making money.
It's about getting the word out of how important aviation is up here. It's our largest community outreach program that we do. And that's why we open up to the general public. It's important that everybody knows how important aviation is in the state. And like I said, who knows who might be interested in learning how to fly and generating that love that we all share for flying.
Investments will also be made in Alaska's aviation future in the form of three $2,500 scholarships for flight and maintenance education. The ice still may be in this weekend at Lake Hood, preventing pilots from getting in the air, but at the trade show, there will be lots of hangar flying. In pilot speak, that means sitting around on the ground, sharing your favorite aviation adventures with whoever will listen. In Anchorage, I'm Rex Gray.
Dozens of kids from communities across the state descended on the village of Quinnahock last weekend to learn, praise, worship, and do a little singing. It was called Singspiration. KYUK's Mark Earhart was there.
In its eighth year, the Singspiration Conference in Quinnahock has drawn Christian youth groups from villages across western Alaska.
I'm Wassalamute, pastoring at Koyuk Covenant Church at the present time.
Okay, and what brings you here to Quinnahock?
I brought the singing group from Koyuk to participate, and not only to see or hear, but to see the youth work that is around this region.
That youth work can be seen and heard through the guitars being plucked and the piano keys being pressed. Kids of all ages, from villages big and small, are here to worship together.
It's all about your heart singing to God, to sing praises to Him, like it says in the Word in Psalms 121.
Joseph Friday of Chivac counts this as his second Singspiration. He and a group of friends seem eager not only to get together and sing, but to talk about their faith as well. Louisa Paul of Kipnuk feels the same way. She says the conference is teaching her how to help people through her faith, making new friends from all over.
Hooper Bay, Skamon, Togiak, Quinnahock, and Twig.
Darren Cleveland, one of the youth leaders running the event, is flustered and busy. He and his team have been feverishly making sure the services go smoothly. The feast is ready at the school, and the kids have beds to sleep in. He counts 12 to 15 youth groups total this year, but he remembers the beginning, when he and a friend started Singspiration when they were just teenagers.
It was just two young kids. One was 16 years old and one was 14 years old.
Darren was that 16-year-old, not so unlike the bright faces sitting in the pews around him.
We should have some type of a youth gathering. I was thinking something like a conference or a festival where we just come together and fellowship.
He and the friend started that gathering, and 8 years later, it has drawn groups together that may otherwise have not met or shared a song.
Although it's really tiring, I won't complain because it's all worth it.
I'm Mark Earhart.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton, Ellen Lockyer, and Rex Gray in Anchorage, Shaylin Cochran in Kenai, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Mark Earhart in Quinnahock. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com. The APRN Speaker Series presents NPR's foreign correspondent Corey Flintoff Thursday, May 24th at the Anchorage Museum. While his career has taken him to over 45 countries, Flintoff got his start here in Alaska with the Alaska Public Radio Network as a producer and host of Alaska News Nightly. Hear from Corey Flintoff. Reservations and information for the 7 p.m. lecture and for the 6 p.m. meet and greet at alaskapublic.org. Proceeds benefit the Alaska Public Radio Network.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.